It's the Progressive Radio Network. How you feeling Thursday live in New York City? The show is Insight. I am Mark Farrell. Thanks for listening in today and every Thursday. And this time, Gary Null follows me each and every Thursday and every weekday at noon. And of course, if you ever miss any show, to any one of the fabulous hosts here on the Progressive Radio Network, always go on PRN.FM, PRN.FM. It's been a pretty busy week, huh? In the news, the Supremes, with their issuing of their cases, Joe Jackson, patriarch of the Jackson 5, died, travel ban. Ugh. Some of the stuff is, you know, I feel like sometimes I just got to take a break. It's just too much information, and you just get so frustrated sometimes, you know? Between everywhere, you can't escape it. Information overload. But I understand, certainly, it's very, very prevalent. And then Justice Kennedy announcing his retirement. I mean, just when you think things are going to start to calm down, it's not going to calm down. New Jersey government shutdown is looming. As of Saturday at midnight, the state may go on a state of hiatus because of lack of funds, lack of approval for spending for the next fiscal year. No surprise. And I think it's going to actually happen because with new Governor Murphy, I think there's a lot of turmoil, to say the least. How unusual. Come on in, guys. We have our first guest of the day joining in our studio, the two Blind Brothers. No, and I'm not being derogatory about these guys. What's up, gentlemen?
What's up?
All right. I'm doing my monologue here, so I'm going to build you guys up and pretend you just walked in a few minutes, all right?
Perfect.
Anyway, so Brad and Brian Manning are here. These guys are just amazing. They're entrepreneurs. They're philanthropists. And they're well-dressed. And they're handsome. And they're funny. And they're well-spoken. Can all this happen to two individuals? Yeah, I guess it does, you know. And you're going to find out about them. But first, I want to tell you about something that it's kind of appalling that took place earlier this week in Homedale, New Jersey. Homedale, New Jersey is a kind of an upper-class city in New Jersey, in central New Jersey, about 50 miles south of New York City. And they had a graduation, and there's a student named Lily Portman, who I want to say hello to and congratulate, because she is going to be attending the Lynn College in Boca Raton. Now, Lily, I mention this not because I'm really envious of your college decision to go to Boca Raton. Are you kidding me? If I went anywhere warm, the only thing I had warm, actually, I didn't even have warm beer in college because I always drank it so fast. But the reality is, how could you go somewhere warm and actually consider education? Anyway, that's a moot point. So the reason why I bring up Lily's story is because something unthinkable happened to her. Lily has spinal muscular atrophy, type 3, and she's in a motorized wheelchair. And so she graduated just like, you know, every typical senior, well-to-do, a great future ahead of her, whether she was going to college, into the workforce, military, trade school, whatever the case may be. But she's going to college. And she was practicing just like all the other seniors at Brookdale Community College. You guys know Brookdale Community College? Hey, guys, make their mics hot. Good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
Okay, so
I'm glad you got our notes on how handsome and smart and funny we were. I didn't know those actually made it through.
Coming from another visually impaired guy, I would take that with a grain of salt. Feel free to put the headphones on.
Okay.
So we're going to introduce you guys in a minute because we want to identify voices momentarily. But could you imagine going to your high school graduation, rehearsal, being very, very psyched, and she has a motorized wheelchair, and she went up the ramp, and, you know, did the pleasantries. I guess shook hands. Here's your fake diploma, yada, yada. Turn around, come back down a ramp, and the next name is called, and so on and so on. So the actual graduation took place the next day. Her name was called, and this is all on video, of course, on YouTube. It's gone viral. And then she was at the bottom of the ramp, and then someone came down the ramp, handed her her diploma, and apparently said, stay put. Or handed her something that looked like a diploma and said, stay put, we'll give this to you backstage. So of course, I guess the parents were in a conundrum. They didn't know what was going on. They were baffled. And I'm sure Lily didn't want to make a scene. And, of course, being in a motorized wheelchair. Of course, now this woman is the same girl who does karate, does horseback riding, and she's very, very talented. That's beside the point. What is wrong here is her milestone and her God-given right to be able to go up on stage after her 4 years of attending high school and getting handed a diploma just like everybody. It's called accessibility. It's called inclusion. It's called doing the right thing. So apparently the superintendent was quoted. His name is Robert McGarry. Robert McGarry, superintendent of Homedale School System. Apparently he was not involved, which I imagine a lot of superintendents aren't in terms of the actual graduation. But he apologized profusely, said this was a lack of communication and sufficient planning. Well, I have to read into this because that's what I do, number one, being someone who has a disability, someone who's been on this earth long enough to understand how people should be treated, and the reality is sometimes how people are treated, how my two guests will attest to momentarily. That I imagine that after, especially since she was there, Lily Portman, for the rehearsal, it went seamless, according to what I read. So what I think happened was they realized it was going to take her probably 30, 45 seconds to get up the ramp, a few seconds for the exchange, 30, 45 seconds to get down. And in that time, maybe they could have called 4, 5, 6, 7 more names. I don't know. I'm just, you know, guesstimating here. But I think that's the reality of what took place. And I think that's a real shame because everyone has a right. If she said, listen, I'm not comfortable going up on stage, that would have been her prerogative. But that's a shame. And what do you gentlemen feel? What's your input about this? Because obviously you graduated high school, you graduated college, and how would you have felt if someone said, well, these two brothers are visually impaired, and I think this graduation diploma handoff should take place off stage?
Well, this is Brad, and I'm the older,
the better looking one.
Yeah, well, I'll take that. From one visually impaired guy to another. I don't know a lot about the context of the situation, but I think that, and I don't know if this is a systemic issue, a single individual who sort of perpetuated this. But I think that for anybody who's facing a particular physical limitation or challenge, you find yourself in a lot of these awkward moments in life. I think originally when we were young, you take offense to it. What we've tried to, I think, the attitude that we've adopted a little bit later in life is a lot of this stuff isn't coming from a malicious intent. It's coming from maybe a lack of awareness or understanding.
Mm-hmm. Education. Yep.
So typically, I don't respond to a lot of those things with an animosity.
Correct.
I feel like, I feel like it's probably somebody's unfamiliarity or just a miscommunication or a misunderstanding, and that if otherwise informed, it wouldn't have happened that way.
Now, if I was there, as the superintendent was there, I would have gone down and inquired what happened, or someone on stage should have took the initiative to say what happened. And then obviously she could have been called back up on stage and said, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. there was a mistake. We were remiss in doing X, Y, or Z, and taking care of it right then and there. But now obviously it exploded. So Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Manning, what is your take on this?
I agree with a lot of points that Brad made, that a lot of situations are lack of education and a lack of understanding of the situation. And sometimes can be a touch of a lack of empathy and, willingness to understand that accessibility may take a few more moments or more interesting workaround or a little bit more effort. But to not allow accessibility or not give somebody the opportunity to at least try is not an ideal thing and is not ultimately going to help anybody. I think in a lot of those situations, or at least in my life, when there has been somebody who's made a gaffe, be it a teacher, be it a friend, be it my mom and dad sometimes, they're usually not ready in that next moment because of maybe a touch of embarrassment or a touch of guilt to resolve it right there. It usually takes a second for people to cool down or to let the moment pass. So I think that's, if I had to guess, probably what happened in this moment, that there was a there was an understanding that something should be changed, but there was a little too much buildup around it that people didn't quite feel comfortable.
And imagine how many thousands of eyes were on her. So we've all been in a situation. We can all, and a matter of fact, we have a great thing we're going to be doing later that I hope you think is going to be great, because the three of us can relate on so many different levels to so many different life expectancies, examples of what happens to us during a given day. So can you imagine being in that position? You know, what you wanted to do. I think, Brad, I think you had told me, or in an interview I saw, that you had told your mom that you would promise the teacher that you'd go up close to the chalkboard, and then you realize how close you were, and then the feedback you got, the questions that you were showered with, peppered with, like, why are you so close? Are you blind? Et cetera, et cetera. So at that moment, I'm sure Lily was sitting there going like, oh my God, I am the center of attention. Thousands of people are looking at me. I just want this thing to be over with. Please get me out of here. Right? We've all been there.
Yeah, no, I 100%, you know, but and it's funny though, I think something that we've come to appreciate is sort of like, you think about Lily in that situation, and people feel either embarrassed for her, you know, and I can't speak for her reaction here, but what I've generally found is we all put on a lot of time, you know, these kid gloves when interacting with somebody who has a particular, handicap or disability or anything sort of different about them. The funny thing is that awkward situation is probably in the bottom 10% of hard things that she's had to deal with. You know, probably getting up and getting
Correct.
Ready in the morning.
Sure.
Put a pressure on her. And for her, you know, my hope for her is that, you know, she'll look at this and she'll see sort of, you know, she'll have an understanding of what happened, and she can, you know, have the communication with the school so that this doesn't happen again. But really, when you have situations like this, the damage is actually to the offender. If that moment got captured on stage and it was a testament to the high school that helped create this wonderful person with all these achievements and
expanded
talents.
Our mind.
And that was captured on film, and it was something that she would be sharing and that the parents of the graduation would be sharing. It would actually build, you know, the goodwill for the whole school,
sure.
You know? And so it's actually a missed opportunity for the school, you know, as much as it is for Lily as well.
And the silver lining is that educationally throughout the nation and maybe internationally, it's a great learning experience about sensitivity, preparation, if anything. I mean, that's why they have rehearsals. That's why the ramps exist. Anyway, so listen, a proper introduction is required. My name is Mark Fowle. The show is Insight. This is the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm proud to welcome two gentlemen that caught my eye about 6 months ago because of their incredible work. They go by the name of Two Blind Brothers. That's their acronym sort of type of or a branding type of name. But their names are Bradford Manning. Hey, hello, Brad. You go by Brad for Brad.
Brad's fine. You know what's funny? I started going by Brad in a lot of our publicity, because Brad Manning is coincidentally the name of the former Chelsea Manning who released all the WikiLeaks articles.
Oh, so him and I, right.
You
right.
know, she and I share a former name.
Very good. And also brother Brian Manning.
Hey,
welcome
how we doing?
To the show, guys.
Happy to be here.
Happy to be here. So these gentlemen have created a company. They didn't go to college for this, but they are going to tell an interesting story about how one shopping experience was the genesis of their company, Two Blind Brothers. Who's going to take this one?
I got it. This is Brian Manning.
I got this one. And I liked how you told your brother, stop banging on the table.
Yeah.
It's given bad feedback. I'm getting a headache
totally.
From him. And more than the usual one.
Take it away, Brian.
So Brad and I, about, I want to say 3 years ago, a little under, were walking around New York City, and I had just moved here, and so he was taking me out to get clothes that he could be seen with me in, as he quoted. But we went into Bloomingdale's, and as you know, when you have bad eyesight or you're visually impaired or you really have any type of issue, shopping is a giant pain in the behind, because you walk around and you can't see the prices, you can't see the labels, you can't see the sizes, you can't even see if it's a man's or woman's
shirt.
Well, that's
the thing I was going to say, finding the actual department sometimes. I was in a store the other day. Sorry to interrupt you, Brian.
No, please.
But I realized like 60 seconds, 2 minutes into it, I'm like, I'm looking at women's jeans.
You would have looked great in them.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I mean, I've done that before. I'll walk around an entire store and be like, it's all women's in here. I don't know why I've been.
Well, I'm shopping for my girlfriend,
yeah,
right?
Sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But so Brad and I, well, when we do that, our first step is just kind of walk around, feel all the clothing until you feel something. You're like, wow, this feels really quality, or this feels very soft, or this feels like a great athletic shirt.
So you've gotten very intimate with mannequins, I guess.
I very, very close. Yeah.
Have you courted any?
I have been kicked out of many stores because of it.
Good thing they don't speak up.
You know, that day we had pulled off the shirt, and then you take a picture of the label or you get a sales associate or something. Well, Brad and I had walked out of the Bloomingdale's actually in Soho, and we had come out with the exact same shirt, which is a funny little coincidence that you would never imagine
to
happen.
That's a huge coincidence. Oh, my Lord.
But so we actually – we played rock, paper, scissors. I inevitably lost.
Because you're mature adults.
Yeah, I mean, like two grown men on the sidewalk, we played rock, paper, scissors.
Did one round, or did it have to go best of three?
One round. One round.
Whoa, that's impressive.
You know, live or die. But so we so we end up taking the shirt back into the store, and I return mine, which ultimately inevitably became a great thing because I don't think Brad even wears that shirt anymore, so I saved some money. But we end up going and realizing that there might be something to this because we looked at our entire lives, and our first interaction with most things is touch and feel and how we love something underhand. We had some very good friends in fashion, and we decided to let's take a run at this. Let's try and make clothing strictly on the sense of touch. And we sat down in a coffee shop near my old apartment, and we went through probably hundreds of fabric books that are about a foot tall, just with no knowledge, just saying, I like this, I don't like this.
Strictly tactile.
Strictly tactile, never looking at price, never looking at what the actual fabric was made of, nothing except for I enjoy holding on to this. We did that for a few months, and then we
You didn't let go for a few months?
Just in my hand.
You must have gotten carpal tunnel.
Oh, it was tough. It was really – work really suffered at that time.
So now your background is in sales?
Yes, I worked at sales at a big data company.
And your background is in finance, correct, Brad?
Correct.
So now we're going to pause there. We're going to think about the time when you guys were younger. You're 5 years apart?
Yes.
Brad, you're 32?
32, and Brian's 27.
I could do the math. Not much more than that. So you were the firstborn. This is a genetic condition, correct?
Correct.
And so when was it determined that you have Stargardt's disease?
So I failed the kindergarten eye chart, and my folks thought I needed glasses. You walk into the the optometrist's office, and they were putting, trying to make it work, and I just wasn't seeing any better. And it actually took about 2 years of hunting around at different doctor's offices and specialists. We got all kinds of feedback. You know, doctors thought I was making it up. They thought my mom was coaching me to make it up. These, you know, syndromes just bizarre.
We're not talking 1950s.
Yeah, I know.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, and so, and then there was the moment where it got diagnosed, where you're in they actually dye your blood, and then they can see, look at your macula, and they can see the scar tissue, and it's a genetic inherited condition where you don't metabolize vitamin A well, and it creates this scar tissue. And so, in that moment, the doctor walked in and told my mother that I had this incurable eye disease. He didn't know how fast or how dramatic the condition would be, but to prepare to lose your eyesight.
And this is on the verge of going into first grade?
That was right.
So you thought your life was over?
Yeah.
How am I going to deal with a Barney Rubble lunch pail that I can't read the comics? I mean, life is hinging on that right there.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you didn't understand what was going on. Obviously, your parents were obviously probably devastated. But then they told you, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because there's two of you in the same family, and I'm not that smart, that you may not have been gifted in the vision department, but this is where they really laid it on. They embellished. They said, but you're so much smarter than any given person.
Yeah.
Is that to you, Brian?
Yeah, that was me, and I know my mom lied to me. She tells me that now. But as a little kid, I mean, that's a fantastic thing to hear. Hey,
grab that carrot, man.
You can't see well, whatever. You are fast and you're smart and you're going to do great. And in that, what it really does is she's giving herself an avenue to never let you make an excuse. hey, I couldn't see it. Brian, you can't see it, but you're smart enough to figure it out. So please go do your homework.
Yep.
And I don't know if it was always for my benefit. It was basically to make parenting easier, I think.
It's going to take you longer. You may have to do it differently, but you'll get it done.
But you're doing it.
So Brad was paving the road, as any bigger, older sibling does. Were there any hints or any examples that you would tell him that, you know, would work for you in school? So when you get to fifth grade, this is what you can try to do? Or,
you know, I wish that I could take credit for a lot of that. But I think where I got, like Brian was just mentioning, we basically took the frame, the mindset, the perspective that our parents, you know, gave to us. So I always grew up with that same idea that this was sort of a side effect of life. It was my particular challenge. You know, I think that we figured out a lot, like, how are you going to function in the classroom, you know? And that was my parents, you know, walking me through a trial and error method. You know, how do you react when, you know, a kid in the class teases you or you start facing things like that? You know, it was trial and error. And that was, I think, a little difference between Brian and I's story. But what started happening to me is, as Brian started growing up, he would take the benchmark that I thought I had reached and was pretty proud of myself for getting to, and he would go further. I was a swimmer and proud that I was, you know, very competitive and successful at a sport. He played lacrosse as a defenseman and figured out that he didn't need to pay attention to the ball. He would just hit the person who was running towards the goal.
I love it.
Yeah.
Simple process.
It's just like being in Bloomingdale's. Find the mannequin,
and
you know,
deal with it.
And get that person on the field and take care of him. That's fantastic. And that's a great way. Because we didn't understand. Like, I didn't understand. I tell a story when I speak at schools, colleges, and corporations. The first time I realized I had a disability is when I did my first triathlon, never realizing I wasn't going to be able to see the swim course. The guns go off, and I come up with an epiphany that I'll just follow everybody. Of course, that sounds much easier than done. And at the end of the race, you know, 2 hours later, I'm realizing as I'm running towards the finish line, yes, I have a disability, but more importantly, it's how you react and adapt and how resilient you can become. And you guys are a testament to that.
Yeah, and you know, and there's a lot of struggles along the way.
Of course, sure.
And you don't learn those adaptations. Like,
except Braille, you learn to read Braille.
Learn to read.
Both of you?
Learn
at
to read,
what ages?
Elementary school.
And I was 5 years. I started taking it, I think, late middle school and high school.
I learned Braille on tape.
How is that possible?
It's not. I wish I could get a caption in your face, Brian. You're like, what?
I was like, we spent a lot of time in this community. I've never heard this before.
The wheels were turning, man. That was priceless.
I was thinking if it maybe ran
across.
Actually,
no, I'm sorry. I had a mannequin as a tutor.
Much, much more helpful.
So you got through school. Obviously, terrifying things, chalkboards, standardized tests. See, there's nothing that could help me either. So I'm totally in your realm, man, because I have retinoschisis, which is splitting of the retina, which I do have peripheral and I do have central, but within those confines, I'll have like dead spots, so to speak, kind of like your cell phone. Can you hear me now? Like, it just doesn't work. Now, for you guys, it's peripheral, correct?
We have that's peripheral
your, yes, that's
vision,
your strong point. Central is not your strong
right,
point.
Right, correct.
Correct. And Stargardt's affects, about 10 million people in the U.S.?
Retinal eye disease affects 10 million people in the U.S. Stargardt's is around, I think, 15,000, or no, 1 in 10,000, maybe 30,000 people
okay.
in the U.S.
That's a big number.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of work with Foundation Fighting Blindness.
It's an unbelievable organization.
It's great,
they've
aren't
they? Been they've, for 40 years. They've put something like $700 million to work to try and cure these diseases. And
that's
a
lot of T-shirts.
That's
guys.
A lot. We're working on it. You want one?
Do I want one? Where's the bag? I don't even see the swag bag. We may have to cut this interview short. We have
I'm wearing
in the
it. I'm wearing,
oh, okay. I'm wearing pre-worn. Sometimes you have to pay extra for that.
Yeah.
It's for vintage, we like to call
vintage.
It.
So you had this epiphany. We're going to talk about some awkward times and that we all experience, whether you have a disability or not. But you come up with this epiphany, the genesis. You're in that coffee shop. You had those samples of material. And then you looked at each other, and obviously this was not your expertise, finance and sales. When did you say to yourself, you know what, let's put all our chips in one pile here and make this work and develop a T-shirt company, which I'm sure a lot of them exist out there, for people who are either blind or visually impaired or not, that just like the feel of it, and it's, everyone loves a good, comfortable T-shirt. I mean, even my girlfriends. My wife loves a good, comfortable T-shirt to sleep in and walk in to work in. So when did you realize that, and what made you say, let's just go for it?
You know, it wasn't a binary burn the ships kind of decision. What happened is we started it.
That's a great line. I love that.
Yeah, burn the ships. Yeah.
I see Matt Gibson saying that. Yeah. Mel Gibson.
They basically, we started it as a side project, a charitable project, something that we could do in our spare time. And then as the story started circulating on social media, we started getting, you know, some media inquiries, you know, radio, television, newspaper stuff, which was so fun for us because we had never done anything related to that at all. We were calling in sick to our jobs.
Yeah, you're working down on Wall Street. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is totally foreign to you.
I think Brian's bosses thought he was on the verge of death.
I'd leave twice a week and be like, I have the doctor. And they'd be like, nobody wanted to ask. Everyone was just like very tiptoey around me.
And then after...
Did you bump into a few extra walls, you just, know, to play it up?
Just fall over on the floor.
There you go.
I'm fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
And so basically, after January of 2017, when we really had an unbelievably fortunate collection of endorsements and media, we thought, you know, this is a rare opportunity in life to do something that's fun, that's good, and that makes a difference to it. It's something that we're very passionate and connected to.
Did you feel like how much of there was there a risk because of, you know, how many years were you working in finance at this point?
I guess it was like 9 years.
So you made a name for yourself at that point.
I don't know if other people would say that, but sure, I'll take it.
I mean, that's a decade in one industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously you're making some coin.
Yeah, we had a lot of connections.
Yeah, sure.
We had a nice business. You know, and part of it is, you know, we didn't know where this project was going to end up. We just knew that through the momentum in the media and the endorsements and the love from the community, we felt like we have to run at this 100%.
Yeah.
We've been graciously given this platform to try to make this work. And we did not want to basically fall short on what we felt was a responsibility to take that energy and move forward with it, you know, and the future is open. Who knows? You know, we don't know where it'll end up, but everything's been great so far.
I have Joseph Abood's phone number in my phone here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so we could talk to him if you need it. Yeah. So, Brian, were you did you need to be cajoled, or were you guys equally like 50-50, let's go for it?
You know, after all the fortunate success in January of 2017, it got to the point where I realized that there really wasn't going to come another opportunity like this in a lifetime, or there may, but why leave that to chance? And I loved my job. I loved where I worked. I loved
you
the
did.
Yeah, I was a heartbreaking thing to leave. I actually offered to give them like a month of notice because I wanted to stay on longer.
Wow. What were you selling? What field?
Banks and credit unions, financial data, and warehousing. So super. Exactly.
Sorry.
But I enjoyed it. But what ended up happening is when I talked to them and they were like, hey, go do this, and there's always a job here if it doesn't work out.
Excellent.
And so we just kind of decided to leave our jobs and try this crazy T-shirt company.
And so with your connections in the industry, that made it a lot easier, I imagine, because you had, you know, some expertise, some sage advice that you could just instantly tap into, which is huge because, you know, that could have taken you 2 years just to ramp up in that area alone.
Yeah.
And now you call the Lighthouse, the Dallas Lighthouse, correct?
Dallas Lighthouse for the Blind.
Mm-hmm. And made a connection with them. And tell us about that, because this is an integral part of the story, because you don't want just these shirts made just anywhere or by anyone.
Yeah, so we actually make our shirts down in Dallas, Texas, by the Dallas Lighthouse for the Blind. So they are a 501c3 that employs 75% visually impaired and blind folks down in Dallas, Texas, because as I'm sure you're aware, unemployment in the visually impaired community is just
huge,
massive. Mm-hmm. I think it's something like 70 or 80% unemployment. But what they do is they have a just so happen to have a manufacturing and cut and sew facility down in Dallas, Texas.
Incredible.
So that we had 12. I think there's somewhere between 10 and 12 women who are all visually impaired or blind. There's a few sighted workers on the line for some of the final mm-hmm. checks and detail work. But so what's amazing for us is we get to donate our profits back to retinal research to try and cure blindness, which is a future goal and aspiration. But today we get to help 12 people have a job every single day, be fulfilled, make a living, and actually get to go to work and help us produce this company and help us grow Two Blind Brothers to wherever it can go.
And take that to a different level to show the world that what people are capable of that are blind and visually impaired and or deaf or and whatever disability one person may have, regardless. Because if you give somebody – I just had a meeting today with people from Helen Keller, great people. Mm. It's all about opportunity. Anyone, whether you have a disability – I say we all have a disability, whether it's real or perceived. It's what we do with it in life that defines us. But to give someone an opportunity who has a disability, that's all they need.
Yeah.
Then they prove themselves. They're the most reliable person at work. They don't take sick days, and they will outperform most people on platforms in that industry. It's amazing.
I challenge anybody, if you ever feel bad for somebody with a disability or have a feeling of they're less capable, mm-hmm. to just go on YouTube, type in, you know, blind person, and just see the amazing them hiking mountains, breaking world records, skydiving, whatever you can imagine, being governor of the great state of New York, running Fortune 500 companies. The moment you start feeling bad for somebody with a disability, they have the capability to just take your job. They are as capable and as talented as anybody, and they're just as hardworking as anybody you could imagine.
Especially in the age of technology. So I got a few years on you guys. So I grew up in an era where there was no assistive technology. No, I'm sorry. My assistive technology existed in a form of a dictionary that was yay high, this wide, and it was from the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. It weighed 11 and a half pounds. It was a large print dictionary.
You were a very strong kid then.
I was, and I got scoliosis because of it, carrying that thing around. But more importantly, what was on my back? Bullseye, right? Yeah. Here's this kid who's visually impaired. Make fun of him. He's a target. I mean, come on. It was ridiculous. I mean, I understand back then, but I say to people now, not that anybody wants to be disabled, but there's never been a better time to be disabled. As you guys know, in the workplace, I mean, what monitor size do you want? 500 feet by 200 feet? You know, I mean, it's endless.
Yeah.
I mean, look in Times Square a few blocks from here. Look at the resolution of these jumbotrons. It's like you're, you know, 2 feet away from them.
Yeah.
We need to be 2 feet away from them to see them, but...
Yeah.
But it's just amazing how far technology has come and how it's made our lives easier. So here you are. You go down to Dallas, Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and I'm sure they were receptive. And when did you realize, okay, this is something that we can fully do? And then how did you decide on just T-shirts?
So we always knew that when we were making our first collection, we just knew we wanted to make something that we liked. You know, we didn't have a merchandising background. We didn't do a market analysis. It really came out of the idea that we wanted to make, you know, this personal project that we would enjoy running. And we thought, you know, there's something to this vigilance, the touch, that it's the first thing that we focus on when we go into a store. We couldn't believe when Dallas Lighthouse said that they could make the clothing. And actually, every part of that story fits exactly what, you know, what our mission, what our values of our company are, which is you can adapt, move forward, you can do good business while doing good. And that actually really, really kind of changed the way we thought about this. And then the two other things which really sort of infused the project with passion were, one is the community. You know, we knew that we were going to do this small project and we were going to donate some money to research. We did not expect all of the support and love and attention from the visually impaired community, which is, in retrospect, was an oversight on our part, but it was so empowering for us to move forward. And then the second thing, and this is just a sort of a business thing, is this past holiday, the company sort of hit another huge inflection point. I think there's something about the brand that gets people in sort of that holiday spirit, and it just took off over those last 6 weeks of the year.
Now
as
you're
well.
Talking about Flag Day?
you know, all through Black Friday and all through December. Yeah, not Flag Day, but they, but it was unbelievable, and it also it basically every time we hit one of these sort of inflection points, it allows us to dedicate more time, more resources, and keep growing the brand.
My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you very much for your time. Give us a call at 888-874-4888, 4888, 888-874. If you'd like to speak with Brad Manning, half of the Two Blind Brothers, and Brian Manning. Gentlemen, you just mentioned something interesting, Brad, you in particular, that you said this is a small project.
Yeah.
Is that true? You were actually launching this as a small project?
Yeah,
now, what is small in this realm?
Well,
capital or what your projection was?
Yeah, both. You know, we just wanted to do something, A, that was fun, and B, did something good. We had followed the Foundation Fighting Blindness's work for a long time. I think one of the things that we've realized over the past 2 years is that there's actually an incredible opportunity for either niche brands or people who are solving a niche problem for a small community, because we can actually reach them through social media in a way that we couldn't have done 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
So we're really excited for, you know, that mother that's helping raise money for autism or the deaf community or you know, or Love Your Melon on pediatric brain cancer. You know, it's amazing, this explosion of brain of branding.
Wealth of information available.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, think about this. 10 years ago, I was working for in addition to radio, for the first website and magazine for people with disabilities called We Media, and it was an incredible experience. But I was thinking about, and I did a radio program streaming for them back then, I was thinking about the person who's in Wisconsin, who's maybe a quadriplegic, who has access to a computer now, who has access to the world, who has access now to Two Blind Brothers' wardrobe. I mean, think about this. I mean, and also, I love the fact that your emblem, I should say, was that what you call it?
Yeah, the metal tag on the
metal sleeve. Tag, and it's in Braille, correct?
Yes.
So it's tactile as well, more so. And was that whose brainchild was that?
You know, I'll take credit.
That's Brian.
No, and actually, the point that you just made about people having access to the world. When we first put out our story on Facebook, just a video we filmed talking about having Stargardt's and starting a clothing company and what we were going to try and do with the profits, we had a gentleman call our customer service line. And by customer service line, I mean at that time
your cell phone.
And he was so unbelievably grateful. He said that he lived 45 miles outside of Albuquerque. He had never met another visually impaired person in his entire life. He read, and I don't know, and if you ever see that video, there's, I think, some hundreds of comments, if not thousands, of folks who are talking about their visual impairment, talking about their experience. And he goes, I felt like I had a community for the first time because I read through every single one of these comments. And then I called the Foundation Fighting Blindness. I called the American Federation for the Blind. I'm going to a new group now. I just wanted to call and let you know that.
And that is phenomenal. I mean, the fact that you, when you feel alone with anything, mental health, disability, that's the most alienating thing and scary thing. But to know that people are out there that are experiencing something similar to you or identical to you can take actually the weight off your shoulders, the world off your shoulders.
And Brad and I felt so fortunate because our whole lives, we had a built-in buddy who was visually impaired.
That's very cool. And I have to mention to you that I, too, had a built-in buddy. My brother was 16 years older than me, 15 years older than me. The same condition. He became a lawyer. My eye, left eye is 2400. My right eye is 2100. His eyes are slightly better. Unfortunately, I didn't tap into him. And I'd share this with audiences. When I was growing up, and I would make soccer teams and basketball teams and quit everything because I wouldn't be honest with myself and obviously ask the coach for an accommodation. Not that I knew what that word was back then, but I'm sure things could have worked out. But I never tapped into him because I always felt scared of my big brother thinking like, and everyone else thinking less of me. So I always made up an excuse. But more importantly, unfortunately, that you guys have this great relationship, a business relationship, a philanthropic relationship, an entrepreneurial relationship, but actually a brother relationship is very special. And unfortunately, my brother, and this is where the interview is going to be like, man, I didn't expect this going to be a big downer here. My brother took his life back in 1992. Unfortunately, he had mental illness, depression,
And unfortunately, so I'm older than he was when he was alive. Mm. So it's very interesting how both of us would have adapted, you know, having kids, what can you do, what can't you do professionally, personally, et cetera. So it's just great to meet you guys on so many different levels and to see you blossom like this and to give to so many different people in so many different ways and not take salaries. Yeah. And everything is all blood, sweat, and joy.
It's been fun.
And maybe some tears.
Yeah, people, we joke that, you know, we put out a lot of content on social media, and the only thing that's not in there are 90% of the fights that we have.
Well, every successful company has a war room.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, that's
anywhere
apartment.
When Brad and I are within 5 feet of each other. Yeah, it's called the war. No,
I'm
kidding.
So here's what we're going to do for a second. Now, on a ride in this morning, I was thinking about all the things, guys, that we have in common. Mm-hmm. And actually, after I take this piece of sticky tape off with my gum on it, and I want to read you some of these things. But before we do that, one of these things, items that I have listed on here is about going into restaurants and the fear of having to read a menu, especially now you guys are both single, correct?
No, have a lovely girlfriend of 3 years.
Yeah. Okay, but you're not married.
Not yet.
Okay, so, and I wish you the best, whichever way that goes. Yeah. But going on dates and not being able to read menus, so and we're going to get to all this, but it's mind-boggling and it's very awkward and creates nervousness, tension. But for example, this morning, I met a client for tea to talk about a job, et cetera. And we go into this crazy restaurant called Nap, N-A-P, York. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay. Well, you're going to see it on the screen. So, by the way, we are on Facebook Live under the Progressive Radio Network. I should have mentioned this earlier. Facebook Live under the Progressive Radio Network. So please log on as well as listen. And we're going to roll a clip here of how you, number one, you have to go up to a kiosk to order, which, number one, I'm like, turn around, let's go. But I knew I'm with a client. They're going to punch in my tea and what I want. And then this is what takes place, and this is how your order comes out. Look at the screen here, guys. This is a conveyor belt.
And wow, here comes my cup of tea. Only an hour later, and it's going roughly 1.2 miles an hour. Hooray! All I need is milk.
Can you believe that? First of all, amazing. How ridiculous is this? You want a cup of tea and or a cup of coffee, a cup of Joe in New York City, in and out, you know, $1.75, boom, 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 gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, this took like 15 minutes. Yeah. But I felt like it was an episode of I Love Lucy. Like, if she was there, she would have been, you know, getting chocolates or trying to speed up the conveyor belt. Or yeah. I wanted to go back and see, like, the monkey. We're putting, like, the Samsonite belts on the conveyor. Remember those commercials?
Yeah.
It was just kind of deplorable. But think about all the times you guys are in restaurants, right? Mm. Reading menus. It happens on a daily thing, right?
Basis. Yeah. And I mean, what we basically can't see menus. And so, you know, you develop some tactics around, you know, you ask the waiter, what do you recommend?
Oh, what's your favorite thing,
What's your favorite thing, actually, and I hope he doesn't mind me sharing the story, but Governor David Patterson told me, you know, that was one of the first things that really hit him in the gut, is he went out to a restaurant and he couldn't see the menu, and the waiter, who just, I guess, didn't have an awareness mm-hmm. or a sensitivity, really made it a difficult experience for him. He said, what do you mean you can't read? You know, I'm not going to read the menu to you, you know, and actually said it made him uncomfortable at restaurants for a period during his younger life. And so you learn these tactics, you learn these tricks. You know, Brian and I have tried to find ways around those awkward situations, you know, our whole lives.
And they're great skill sets. So I titled this segment Experience That We See Eye to Eye, you know, SATs. Did that freak you out or what?
Those were not all. I got the giant point.
Me
font,
too.
And I don't know. I can see it. Really.
You too as well?
And extra time,
oh
too.
Oh, my God. So and it still didn't help me.
Maybe you should tell your.
So I, in high school, you know, there's the SAT and the ACT.
Yes,
now.
Exactly.
So I got the ACT. And I don't know if I should say this in public or not.
You can.
But I hope your viewership is nobody who is at the ACT board. But I took it twice. And I got the same test two times in a row.
Fantastic.
Which is supposed to be impossible. But what I've realized thinking about this for the last 20 years is that they only made one version of the large print test.
Of course.
And so when I took two large print tests, I just got the same test twice. It was the luckiest thing.
So the million-dollar question is, did it benefit you?
Oh, it did well. Okay. Did really well
good,
the second
good,
one.
Good. Awesome. Another thing, school chalkboards we talked about. needing magnifiers to find a magnifier. You know? Standardized tests we talked about. Exhaustion, just setting in, completing in your name section. Right? That would be exhausting.
Yeah.
Okay. Playing sports, gym, underperforming, or simply put, sucking.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that hits you early. You know, kids are very, we were competitive, we were athletic, but then when you can't catch a baseball, you don't know what to do, you know? I think we found workarounds, but, you know, it took a little while of getting kicked around to figure out what we were good at.
My workaround was I'd be in center field, I hear a thump, and I turn around and they're like, to your right. No, you're on the right. It was terrible. But the one thing is we all have like these stories of like how things turn around. I drove in the winning run on a full count.
Oh, really?
And the most embarrassing thing is I dove to first base. Not knowing, of course, you can overrun first base. So here's a triple whammy, okay? Bad eyes for me and you guys. Bad skin. Really bad acne. I had to go on Accutane, which is a horrible drug. And husky. Man,
I can see on two. I'm gonna let you guess which two.
For you?
For me?
Skin.
No, I was a big kid.
You were husky.
I enjoyed the sweets.
And then you got the college, and it was replaced by beer.
Yeah, and then that came in, and then eventually I was like, oh, running is what these people have been talking about.
Yes, caloric burn.
This is good.
Yeah. How about yourself, Brad?
Well, so I have the bad eyesight. I wasn't husky and I did have good skin, but I am also, and so is my sister, a type 1 diabetic.
Ah, okay. All right, so a little bit more life complication. Okay, lunchtime, high school or even college. You see somebody when you're getting food. Hey, great, John, Mary Sue, I'll meet you out there. You get out there, crickets. You can't find anybody.
Yeah.
Would that drive you crazy?
Yeah. That's actually one of my biggest complaints. High school was small enough, so you kind of knew everybody and where they were and stuff. But in college, you want to meet tons of people, and you go out the night before and you're walking around campus and you don't recognize them because you don't recognize their face.
Exactly.
You know, I think just as a side note, one of the things that we talk about whether or not vision impairment has given us certain gifts or helped us kind of learn certain skills. And I think, you know, the minute we decided, you know what, I don't mind just sitting down with a table of strangers.
Absolutely.
And it's brutally awkward the first 50 times you do it. And then you actually start to develop a little skill around talking to strangers. And that's something that we started doing in college.
Yeah, and you grow. I mean, you learn. It's like reading a book every day. You know, you read the newspaper. You meet different people, different experiences, different cultures. I just gave a speech in my hometown recently about unity and how the face of Main Street America has changed. Obviously, that's a very controversial point in the administration and around the country right nowadays. But, I mean, that's something we need to embrace, and disability is one of them. Okay, insensitive college professors. I remember a college professor, you know, every semester after every first class going up to, hi, Mr. and Mrs. blah, 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 Professor so-and-so, my name is Mark, I have a visual impairment. You don't look blind. Well, Professor so-and-so, I'm actually not blind, but, you know, the yada, yada, yada. I would need more time to take a test. Well, I can't give you more time. I can't give you. And this is what we would go through. Or I may need papers that are enlarged. Well, you'd have to speak to my secretary. I mean, it just would become a grueling. So every semester I'd be like dreading it.
You too?
No, that happened. It happened. Most teachers were fairly understanding after the first 2 minutes of the conversation. I had one professor who dug in and was like, "I'm not helping you. I need to see the document from the Learning Needs Center." And I was like, "Well, just so you know, they say it takes 3 weeks for them to get every. They have a lot of students they got to get through. I know you put a test in the first week and a half here, so you know if you can give me grace here." And him and I went to war. And
good for you.
As we're at the front of the classroom, you know, students starting to file in, and one of them walks up and just goes, "Hey, I don't want to jump into this, but like I know him. I've known him for 3 years. He is legitimately blind, and I've been in a lot of his classes. He does get bigger tests."
Wow.
And the guy's like, "Until I see the proof." And so him and I, we actually stopped class, went to the head of the department, And I was like, because I'm not going to let you deal with this.
Really?
So I went to the head of the department and had a knockdown, drag-out fight in front of this guy.
What year were you in?
This is my junior year of college.
All right. So maybe that's something you couldn't have done as a freshman.
No.
Man,
by
hats
no.
off.
I was thinking about, was it Lily at the...
Lily, correct.
And so I was thinking about that. My senior year in high school never would have... I would have just walked away. I'm
sure.
Yep, totally done. Yep. Not my problem. Yep. I'm just done.
Wow.
But now it's so funny. I wish I could give that piece of advice to somebody, and maybe somebody out there listening will take this, is that you can stand up for yourself about whatever you need to, and people will usually either listen or you can, as long as you do it in a respectful and kind and thoughtful way, people will listen, and you will be able to improve your own life just by saying, I am putting a stake in the ground on this, not on everything,
exactly.
but on this moment, this is what's
matters. It's all about how everything is couched. You know, I believe some people are ignorant out there, and then there's people who are insensitive who choose. Anyway, I want to get some of these through some of these lists. When you're out with a date or you're crushing your girl, how many times you've been asked this? And it's not about you, it's about them. So you don't know what I look like.
Every single
isn't that hysterical?
I was single for four years in New York City. Every single date would be...
Brad, it's not about you, because you can't appreciate how beautiful they are.
Yeah.
But you can appreciate their shallowness.
Yeah.
Lack of compassion. How about you, Brian?
It was almost every conversation I ever had.
Well, now, what about your driver's license? 17, you get a Carvel ice cream cake, but no driver's license.
Yeah. I actually did get my driver's license, which is thanks to the great state of Virginia. With a monocular lens, you can drive. It was... both scary, terrifying, and probably horribly dangerous. But I drove for about a year and a half, but couching that by saying I would probably drive 4 miles a week.
Can you see this?
On the left.
Telescopic device.
Yeah.
Bioptic lenses. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, were you able to get your license, Brian?
I got mine. I was even a worse driver than Brian and basically stopped driving after, you know, a year and just a few trips.
So did you get any action in that year and a few trips?
No. Any accidents or any action?
Action. Who cares about accidents? I'm sure you ran into stuff.
Yeah, not because of my driving. That's
because of your good looks, charm, and wit. All right, so you like the way this is going, right?
Yeah, of course.
These are all things we can say. Okay. Dates having to pick you up. How embarrassing was that?
Oh, God. Well, actually, you know what's so funny? It's awful, especially when everybody else can drive. But again, you basically have to maybe develop those skills and aspects of your personality that you can work with, you know? So, you know, you'd be in the, you can't pick her up on a date, but maybe you can keep her laughing, having fun.
You know, so. Well, the most embarrassing part for me is not having, the woman drive up to my house. And, you know, my mother was a high school nurse, so that was a double whammy. So she probably knew all the girls I was dating. So the door would open and I'd be like, Mom, whatever. She'd be like, she's wearing that? What is she, a hussy? I'm like, and then meanwhile, internally I'm screaming, yes! You know? But all the remarks you'd have to withstand. I mean, it's brutal. Now I know how women, what they have to go through when a guy picks them up.
One workaround for anybody who cares is I always would do a lot of double dates with my best friend in high school.
Oh,
so that was one
good.
Way
that
we
got
around it.
I'm sure you're not a fan of movie subtitles.
Oh, don't even watch them.
Foreign films, no. Mistaking food all the time in the dark.
Oh,
biting something that you think is something else.
Eating a lemon when you think it's like a squash.
Yes, exactly. This is great. I'm in a movie theater years ago, and it's dark. Of course, you don't want to go into a movie theater when it's dark, but sometimes we have to. You wait for a brighter scene. But I'm in with my niece, who back then was probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old. So I'm walking into the seats, and I'm in front. I sit down. I grab her, and I go to place her in the seat next to me, but I slam her into the wall.
Oh, God.
Because I could not see the wall next to me. To this day, we still laugh. Because it was a curtain wall. You know, remember the Jerry Lewis theaters?
Yeah.
So all these things are really funny. Subway, stop signage, or the Metro card reader. Are you kidding me?
I play a fun game every time I'm on the subway of, is it my stop and can I get back on the train in time? Where you take off out of the train, you try and find it, and you go, okay, 14th Street, and then you try and dart back in before the doors shut on you.
Shopping, you know, food, liquor, forget it. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
So here's a good story. So I met this beautiful woman on a beach years ago, 2005. And I met her fleetingly, literally for a few seconds. I thought she was gorgeous, way too young for me. Next thing you know, I have a date with her a couple of weeks later. She said, meet me at this bar, et cetera. So she's Indian, striking. And I said to my friend, listen, would you come along with me? And I need you as a spotter because, you know, I'm going to meet her there at whatever, 8 o'clock. And he goes, yeah, sure, anything for you, Mark. So I'm walking around, and there's an Indian woman there, and I keep going by, and she's not looking at me. I'm going by, like, smiling at her. Finally, I'm like, this must be her. And I go up to her. It's not her.
Oh, God.
So finally, my current wife, who was my date who was late.
Oh, wow.
It's a funny story, but she finally shows up, and my spotter goes, there she is! I mean, it's just amazing.
Maybe it worked for you, because maybe she walked up and thought, this guy has swagger. He's just chatting up everybody.
Totally. Because I'm thinking now I could have had kids with totally someone else.
it was funny. My first date with my now girlfriend is we went to a tapas place, which was stupid on my part. I should never have picked that because it's impossible to read the menu. I go over and I go, yeah, you know, anything on there that's really jumping out at you? And she goes, I love everything. And I was like, not helpful, but here we go. I go, anything that you really just can't stand? She goes, no, honestly, everything looks really delicious on this menu. You know, what are you looking at? And I was like, yeah. And I just point to a random thing on
her
menu.
Breast?
And she, no.
Oh, good.
No, and I just point to a random thing. I go, this is what I really want. She goes, oh, the octopus. I was like, never had that. And in my head, I'm like, I've never had that before, but you've committed. So I was like, oh my God, it's the best thing in the world here. My roommate's been raving about it for weeks. And she's like, I can't wait. And so we get it. And I was like, oh wow, this actually is really delicious. That gamble paid off.
Oh good. I thought you were going to have to do the napkin trick. Gentlemen, we're running out of time, but I don't want to let you go without having this clip shown. You're on Ellen DeGeneres because obviously you caught the attention of the world. And here's a clip. And if you're on Facebook Live, and if you're not, it's under the Progressive Radio Network. Look at the screen, gentlemen.
Thanks. Our friends at Shutterfly love what Two Blind Brothers is doing, and they want to help you find a cure. So they are going to buy $30,000 worth of t-shirts. So everybody.
That was a good day.
Yeah, that was a good day. Yeah, thank you, Ellen.
Can I give you another hug?
Yes, you can.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Very nice. Good for you guys. Good for you guys. Oh, and you gave t-shirts to audience members?
To the whole audience.
Wow. And you didn't bring a single goddamn t-shirt for me?
You
filled an entire audience. You outfitted one?
We've made this mistake where we realize if we were to bring you the right t-shirt, we have to bring the size and the color that you like. So we are gonna ship you some, but we got to figure out what size and color you want.
Brad, you're full of shit. Guys, I just take my hat off to you on many levels because just making your way in this world, you know, with a disability, takes a certain character. And I applaud you for that. Taking it a step further, coming together and actually finding yourself after each other, after getting lost in Bloomingdale's, having this epiphany, putting it to fruition and actually having existence online, giving people jobs at the Dallas Lighthouse for the blind and visually impaired, and developing a name for yourself in the marketplace, not taking salaries, giving this money to the Foundation Fighting Blindness, and it goes on and on. Your philanthropic measures, your TED Talks, the way you give back, and you said this, and I would rather you say this, but we're running out of time, that yes, your vision's taken away something, but you're able to give more than what you've lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Final words, gentlemen.
And I think what you're teaching people here is exactly that same message, and we really appreciate being invited here.
And to anybody out there who has a disability or perceived disability or whatever it is, you are absolutely not alone in the world. And frankly, if you're willing to work hard enough and come up, be creative enough, it can turn into your biggest strength. That just because people don't perceive it doesn't mean it's not true.
Absolutely. My mantra, my difference makes me stronger. I think that applies to everybody. You know, you have to use what you have. You know, you have limitations. We all have a gifted personality, or we're good at IT, or we're good at math, or we're good at, you know, sign language. But, you know, we have to use what we have. Gentlemen, Two Brothers, blindbrothers.com, right?
Two
spelled out, T-W-O, blindbrothers.com. And we got shorts on there, all sizes for men and women.
Yes, sir.
Yes. delivered soon, next day?
Yeah, whenever you want it. We'll get yours here.
I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about the rest of the community.
Folks at home.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time and commitment. And I know that future is just a very soft future for you because tactile. And I just applaud you on many levels.
Thank you so much.
My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much. Gary Noel's next. If you ever want me to speak at your school, college, corporation, it's markfarrellmotivation.com. Markfarrellmotivation.com. I enjoyed the company of these gentlemen today. We're going to try to get Lily on the show because we want to hear her side of the story about not being allowed on the stage last week for graduation. From all of us here at Progressive Radio Network, have a great day.